Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 30th day of August, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's start off our look at the news today with scapegoats and smokescreens. And sometimes, at least a few, even of the left, begin to see through the smoke. And that may be a bigger problem for the deep state than they know. We'll go first to the left-leaning Daily Mail coverage, where the headline says, a top FBI agent accused of protecting the president's scumbag son, Hunter Biden, from all kinds of criminal probes, has resigned. And the veteran, it says, has been marched out of FBI headquarters over claims that he, can you imagine such a thing, suppressed the Hunter Biden laptop from hell story and was, oh wow, here's a shocker, politically biased. A guy you probably never heard of, especially if you watch CNN, Timothy Tybalt, was the assistant special agent in charge of the NOT investigation, and he has now resigned. Obviously, they hope one scapegoat will be enough. After being dismissed from the supervisory role by the chief whoremeister for the new American Gestapo, Chris Wray. And this comes after whistleblowers have alleged that Tybalt and other high-ranking officials allowed political bias to influence their handling of the case. Quadruple duh on that one. The sacrificial scumbag was escorted out of the D.C. HQ for the last time last Friday. The Daily Mail says Tybalt was one of 13 assistant special agents assigned to investigate the Hunter Biden laptop saga and was finally, when they couldn't stand the heat anymore, removed from a supervisory role by the head scumbag in charge, who should have been removed years ago. And the story notes Timmy Tybalt was also singled out by Senate Judiciary Ranking Member Chuck Grassley, who back in the middle of July penned a letter to Wray and his boss, the Capo de Tutte Capo, Merrick Garland, imploring them to finally act on allegations of political bias influencing agency operations. And now you see what the result was. A little bit of action way too late, and I think they're hoping it's going to go away, folks. But is anybody really believing that just getting rid of one incredibly evil scumbag in a whole nest of vipers is actually going to make this agency as pure as the driven snow? This should be the first of, oh, give or take, about 35,000. Wrote Grassley in that letter, as you are aware, Assistant Special Agent in Charge Tim Tybalt is not the only politically biased FBI agent at the Washington field office, reminding Wray that, quote, the FBI answers to Congress and the American people. Well, at least the Daily Mail does admit that the resignation of this particular scumbag follows a flurry of damning claims and incredible amounts of evidence, too, about the FBI and their handling of the Hunter Biden probe, among other outright acts of tyranny, violation of their oath to the Constitution before God, and, of course, outright treason. And they note that Republican Senator Ron Johnson sent a letter to DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz last week, observing that the Bureau deliberately dragged its feet in that so-called investigation and told agents not to look at the laptop. I think, folks, the evidence suggests they told them a lot more than that, like to just plain bury it and make sure that, along with everything associated with Hitler and so many other crimes that they've been covering up, it never saw the light of day. They were at least able to put it off until well after the election and get away with it for at least 2 years so far. But what's interesting, folks, is what I didn't see in that Daily Mail piece, but did see in Jim Hoff's story for the Gateway Pundit. Tim Tybalt had other unsavory things on his resume. He was the mastermind behind the affidavit to raid President Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago. He has longtime connections, who could have thought it, to the Clintons and the Obama regime. And Tybalt was also the ASAC, or assistant agent in charge, in investigating sick, and double sick, the voter fraud that was able to successfully steal the 2020 election. Does anybody think for a second that the scumbags who put this scumbag where he was didn't know precisely what they were doing? People like this rise to the top in corrupt organizations because they're groomed and selected. Good riddance, and that means there's only about 35,000 or so more to go. And that number, 35,000, which represents the current size of America's Gestapo, ironically, is less than half of the amount that the Biden Fuhrer and the oath breakers in Congress just decided they wanted to unleash on the American people as part of their new tyrannical standing army of, in this case, IRS agents, just in time for the post-meltdown crackdown. Here's a related story I alluded to up front from an unlikely source, but at least one that's more and more beginning to realize, hey, I've been duped. Late-night comedian Bill Maher, who on his real-time show Friday pointed to damning remarks made by so-called philosopher Sam Harris, who said he wouldn't care if Hunter had corpses of children in his basement if it meant, because the ends justify the means, don't you know, for the far left, defeating the evil Trump. At that point, Mayer said, my friend Sam Harris was on a podcast. They were talking about Hunter Biden's laptop, which was a story, and now all the mainstream press has finally admitted it was a real story. It was a real laptop. Now look, he continued, let's not pussyfoot around this. He was selling the influence of his father, Joe Biden. I mean, most political sons do, said Mayer. But still, he noted, Hunter Biden's laptop was buried by the press. Even the head of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, admitted that was a mistake. And he said they buried the story because they remembered what happened with the evil FBI whoremeister. He didn't put that in there. You hosted, of course. James Comey. And that letter, 11 days before the 2016 election. What he's admitting here, folks, is that the FBI and the press failed to keep a lid on that story, and look how badly it cost them. They couldn't even rig the election as a result of the landslide that followed thereafter. So he said, Sam Harris said it was okay for Twitter and the heads of big socialist tech and journalistic organizations, sick, to feel that what they were dealing with was a once-in-a-lifetime moral emergency, as he put it, meaning Trump. So, said Mayer, he's saying it's okay to have a conspiracy to get rid of somebody as bad as Trump. And I guess to his credit, not only is Bill Mayer indicating that he seems to have a problem with that, but he's actually willing to come right out and admit it, even in front of some of the wokest of the woke leftists, like the meathead himself, Rob Reiner, who was with him shortly thereafter. And this exchange is actually, at least on his part, bold and downright funny.
So he's saying it's okay to have a conspiracy to get rid of somebody as bad as Trump. It's a little bit of a thorny question because once you go down this road, this is sort of where we are in this country. The other side is so evil, anything is justified in preventing them from taking office. Is it?
No. You know what's not justified? Using armed violence to try to kill people in the Capitol. That's not justified.
Answer this question.
Huh?
Answer this question.
What is
was
the
it appropriate? The question is,
was it appropriate
to bury the Hunter Biden?
You're talking about the press doing that?
He's saying that's what they did, and that is what they did. They buried the Hunter Biden story before the election because they were like, we can't risk having the election thrown to Trump. We'll tell them after the election. Well,
and we know for a fact that that's what they did?
Of course. You
no,
don't
but
follow
I mean,
this.
Saying you know for a fact that that's what they did? I don't know what they did.
I know, because you only watch MSNBC.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
Well, then you would know about this.
I do know about that.
Well, you're acting like you know.
I do know about that, and I do watch Fox.
Oh, well, there you go. The meathead watches Fox. And at least when he's uncomfortable enough, he might even admit it. Whoa.
I do know about that, and I do watch Fox. But the point is, we're going to prove now that the press tried to.
They're admitting it. They're,
the press is admitting it.
Yes, that's not even an issue anymore. They're saying, yes, we basically did this because we didn't want this to throw the election.
And this time around, let's say what Bill Mayer still isn't quite able to come out and admit, they wanted to rig the election and make sure that it wasn't thrown, as he put it, by actual people coming to vote in mass and overwhelming the amount of fraud they already had built into the system. I guess even in dumbed-down America, somewhere out there, there's still a limit to credulity. If Biden got all the votes, for example, why, even the Supreme Court might not sit still for that. Which is why they needed thousands of mules and copy machines after they shut down the counting. From there, back we go to undermining the U.S. from the military front again. This piece comes from WorldNet Daily, and it's about Coast Guard Academy cadets who, tried and failed to seek a religious exemption from the unconstitutional anti-life Cyclone B mandate for the experimental COVID-19 84 vaccine, which, of course, as everyone who's been paying attention knows, hasn't prevented infection or transmission as promised, but has killed a whole lot of people. They've just been given 24 hours to get out of Dodge, leave campus, upon notification of the fact that their request was denied. Call it a slam dunk. The cadets were notified of their dismissal as of August 18, given no further information regarding their future or lack thereof in the service, according to Just the News, as WorldNet Daily is also reporting. Said attorney R. Davis Younce for the group, quote, the steps taken by the Coast Guard Academy are clear religious discrimination against Christians and reflect a total disdain for the faith and constitutional rights of cadets. And just how many times, folks, do we need to see proof on that score? Seven of the cadets have been dismissed but are still enrolled in the academy and are required now to attend their military trainings online. They're not allowed to leave the Coast Guard and seek another job, and now that they've been sandbagged, it's too late for them to transfer to another, hopefully less tyrannical and more American, college. Although, admittedly, those are getting fewer and farther between. By the way, the complaint that these young people have lodged cites another whistleblower report to Congress late last week alleging that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine at Coast Guard medical clinics is not, and gee, this is a shocker, I hope you're sitting down, it's not the Comirnaty vaccine that was, slam dunk, fully approved by the Federal Death Agency. And in a recorded phone call, a cadet told Just the News that a Pfizer rep acknowledged that the FDA-approved vaccines, sick, aren't really being administered to anyone. Meanwhile, the Coast Guard lies and claims, oh no, those doses at their clinics were the fully approved version. As you've seen, what are you going to be able to do about it anyway? Here's the real key, folks. The attorney told Just the News that the actions of the Coast Guard continue to have a devastating impact on morale and military readiness, and guess what? That is precisely what's intended. But that's not the only way the military is being undermined. Says Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge, Pentagon stockpiles are admittedly, quote, uncomfortably low amid transferring a whole lot of weaponry to Ukraine, as officials are now admitting. Quote, it's not at the level we would like to go into combat, said a U.S. defense official to the Wall Street Journal concerning the Pentagon's fast depleting stockpiles due to unprecedented, read traitorous, folks, defense aid to Ukraine. And they stressed in particular that ammunition for artillery is now, quote, uncomfortably low. What's more, the shortfall will likely last into the future, given the supply chains have been shut down and destroyed. And that's the new given now, that the norm for new purchases, manufacturers supplying weapons, takes a process of years. Quote, the U.S. has, during the past 6 months, supplied Ukraine with 16 rocket launchers, known as HIMARS, thousands of guns, drones, missiles, and other equipment, and much of that, including ammunition, has come directly out of U.S. inventory, depleting stockpiles, and some of us would suggest that's the intent, folks, that were intended for unexpected threats, although maybe somebody might have expected them and then planned for this. Back to the quote, say defense officials. In total so far, the U.S. has pledged to send $13 billion in taxpayer-provided arms to Ukraine after only 6 months of the latest conflict, and given the alarm over Washington's own dwindling stockpiles, the Department of Defense, sick, is now opting to send smaller 105mm rounds to the Biden Theater instead of 155mm guided smart artillery shells, which it would seem they're running out of anyway. This after a senior U.S. defense official admitted back in July at a briefing that the Ukrainian army was blowing through about 3,000 of those 155mm shells per day. And it looks like at least some in the Pentagon are becoming, quote, increasingly uncomfortable with the rate of the so-called donations. Maybe they're hearkening back to the Taliban and all the donations that they got. Gee, folks, it's almost like nobody's actually learned the lessons of Afghanistan. Or maybe they have, and that's why they're making sure that any real ammunition is going to the IRS instead of American defense. And lest you think that it's just the United States and its military that's being destroyed from within, other NATO allies are facing the same problem, especially so-called neutral Germany, which has dramatically shifted its historic stance on not sending weapons into foreign conflict zones. A number of German politicians have warned that Berlin shouldn't be sharing weapons from their own limited arsenal, saying, quote, unfortunately, the situation here is such that we have an absolute deficit in our own stocks, unquote, according to Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock. By now you're probably wondering, hey, how's that China provocation going? Taiwan's defense ministry, says another piece from Zero Hedge, has issued new details about a live fire incident with a Chinese drone, which happened near Taiwan-controlled islands in the Dadan, Erdan, and Shiyu areas. Crucially, Taipei is now confirming that live ammunition was used for the first time, not merely warning flares, as has been done in previous confrontations, like back in July. Quote, as Taiwan's military had warned on Sunday, August 28th, troops fired live ammunition on a Chinese drone that failed to heed warnings as it flew over an outer island on Tuesday. And they described the drone cluster as including, quote, three batches of three civilian drones, which, as protocol dictated, first had warning flares fired at them, but then soldiers fired what they called defensive shots at the drone after it continued to circle and didn't go away. Now they've said that there'll be a four-step process for future encounters, first firing those signal flares, then reporting the intrusion, trying to drive the drone out, and if necessary, shooting it down. While China, of course, remains busy issuing their own stark warnings, claiming that if you shoot down the PLA's drones, you may trigger a war. And all of this, as Zero Hedge notes, has markets skittish, to put it mildly. From Hal Turner's radio show next on the European front, Britain has begun moving warplanes to civilian airports. Yeah, they're preparing to station combat aircraft at civilian airports for the first time since World War II in response to, what else, the Bidenflation in Ukraine. The dispersing of planes across the country, says the piece, will allegedly help the Royal Air Force and their rapid response units survive what might, in fact, be telegraphed here, upcoming attacks on their bases. It's called the ACE scheme for Agile Combat Employment, and it was initially intended for potential hotspots overseas, like the Middle East, Indo-Pacific, and Eastern Europe. But now, the trial, upcoming soon, will have Eurofighter Typhoon and F-35 jet fighters based at Norfolk, Lincolnshire, and Scotland, quote, scattered in small groups and based discreetly in a number of regional airports with suitable runways. All because of words that appear in the story and are at least raising some eyebrows. Times of imminent crisis. Turning now to the economic front and the imminent meltdown, as tensions remain high, says a piece from Gold Eagle and Chris Marcus about an interview with London Paul, Russia and the East are, and we've known this for a long time, folks, but it sounds like more and more people are waking up to it, they're moving away from the COMEX, a.k.a. the Crooked Casino, or CRIMEX, as some call it in the U.S., and the British version, the LBMA, or London Bullion Metals Association. Eastern countries, it says, are continuing to import gold while making their own arrangements to set up their own exchanges and infrastructure and avoid places where they sell paper metal and don't generally have to worry about delivering them, especially if you're not on the favored nation list. After decades of being bound, it says, to the fiat dollar system and the Federal Reserve, which continues to print and expand like there's no tomorrow, Eastern nations are continuing to develop alternatives. And geopolitical analyst London Paul of the Sirius Report has explained the shift away from paper assets amidst the Russia-NATO-backed Ukraine war, noting what we're seeing is a shift from the current financial system, given that it's more and more obvious that this particular fiat scheme and the biggest debt bubble in human history won't last forever, and some of the rats, at least, are starting to desert that sinking ship. While we're on the topic, one more nail in that coffin, this time courtesy of Dr. Ron Paul, MD, and the Ron Paul Institute, about the latest Biden-Fuhrer scheme, the student debt forgiveness, which he says is, quote, unforgivable. Last week, he notes, the Biden-Fuhrer announced that he is creating, by executive fiat, a new program forgiving $10,000 fiat dollars of student loan debt for those with incomes under $125,000 a year, and the amount rises to $20,000 for borrowers who are Pell Grant recipients. Biden, says Dr. Paul, flip-flopped on the issue as he had previously, and more correctly, denied that the president has any such authority, especially to create a new student loan debt forgiveness program. But now he's managed to find, or at least somebody put it on his teleprompter, a 2003 law, sick, allowing the Education Department to waive or modify provisions of federal student financial assistance programs to help students, listen to this, that are affected by war, or other military operations, or a national emergency, which gives him that authority. And the Biden-Fuhrer claims debt forgiveness is necessary because, booga, 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 the continuing COVID national emergency. Says Dr. Paul, it would seem odd that Biden would claim a national emergency when even the Centers for Death and Control have stopped recommending lockdowns, masks, and so-called socialist distancing. And a broad student loan forgiveness program doesn't seem to even fit the purposes of the statute, which was, at least supposedly, to provide student loan forgiveness for military personnel, first responders, and others actually engaged in fighting the war on terror. Nowadays, of course, the war is terror against Americans under the guise of Big Brother's own standing army. Another basis offered for the president claiming the power to cancel the loans is a provision to the 1965 Higher Education Act, there's a laugher, isn't it, that gives that same education department limited authority to modify or forgive student loan debt. And as Dr. Paul notes, who knows what the so-called courts will now do. Ultimately, though, you can pretty much bet the new debt once created doesn't really go away. It's simply added to the national debt and the coming inflation time bomb. to which this latest debacle will add $300 billion to maybe half a trillion dollars in new national debt. All of which, says Dr. Paul, will obviously increase pressure on the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates low, because otherwise the debt bomb explodes sooner rather than later. That would lead, though, to continued price inflation and, inevitably, a major economic crisis. Dr. Paul suggests, as he generally does, that what's going on here is in fact impractical, also immoral, and that a major step in trying to avoid what your host will suggest is now inevitable would be convincing a critical mass of people to understand that the welfare warfare state and the fiat money system that underlies it are exactly that, an abomination. But honestly, folks, at this point, I think the right course is to admit the die is cast, what's coming is now inevitable, and it's just a question of how soon and how awful it's going to be. Let's hearken back now about a year to an earlier bit of absolute unconstitutionality. This warning from Andrew Andrzejewski, CEO and founder of OpenTheBooks.com, originally published in Forbes and also now in places like Zero Hedge, about the Biden Fuhrer, who, the piece opens, didn't just announce a counterproductive, worthless COVID-1984 so-called vaccine mandate on companies employing 100 or more people, at least while they last. He intends to enforce it. On Saturday, the speaker for the traitors, Nancy Pelosi, and her House communists quietly tucked an enforcement mechanism into their so-called $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, passed it right out of the budget committee, and then sent it to the communist House floor. But buried on page 168 of that House Socialist Party 2,465-page mega bill is a tenfold increase in fine for employers who, quote, willfully or repeatedly or even seriously violate a section of so-called labor law that they now actually intend to enforce, dealing with hazards, death, or serious physical harm to their employees. Well, unless, of course, they're harmed by the poke, or unless they're harmed by a mask that deprives them of oxygen, which, at least once upon a time, OSHA used to actually measure in the workplace and decree that if employees deprived of oxygen, like, for example, being forced to wear a mask, suffered as a result, the company was liable for that and would be punished. What an amazing twist. Now they're punishing companies for not harming their employees' health. The increased fines on employers, says the story, could run as high as $70,000 for what they call serious infractions, in other words, something that doesn't make a darn bit of difference, and $700,000 for so-called willful or repeated violations. Call it $750,000 or so for each fine. And all of this could bankrupt the non-compliant, freedom-loving companies, in other words, even more quickly than the $14,000 OSHA fine anticipated under the already announced Biden mandate. This evidently in response to Republicans who threatened lawsuits over what they called correctly federal overreach, not to mention unconstitutional tyranny, when the communist Chinese puppet said, quote, have at it, we're playing for real here, this isn't a game, unquote, and no, this sure as hell isn't remotely constitutional either. But the intent is clear. Employers who won't play ball with Big Brother will be eliminated. So your host has to ask again, how much longer will actual Americans continue to put up with this you-know-what? And how many have to die first? Let's talk now, before we run out of time today, about a story that I almost did yesterday but ran out of time, concerning a major outage in SNAP, or the so-called Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, once called food stamps, affecting Americans across the country. According to Down Detector, SNAP users began reporting outages around 8:30 a.m. Pacific time Sunday morning, and by noon about 5,000 users had reported they couldn't get the SNAP payments. As one example, a user wrote on Twitter, I just called the police over here. They won't accept my EBT, and they will let me pay it later when the system comes back up. This ain't right. We're starving out here. Another said, EBT is down in NYS, and it's interesting to see just how much power the government has. People are losing it today. A woman who shopped for over $200 worth of stuff had to return everything because her card wasn't working. And this comment's almost funny, folks. Ponder the irony, but also ponder the implications. EBT is down all across the country. Welcome to Biden's America. And I'll ask it, was this just regular, ordinary incompetence or yet another beta test? Regardless, though, it's a harbinger of things to come. So be paying attention, because the anger we're seeing when people can't get their freebies can easily be multiplied by, oh, a million or so when people can't get anything. Warned and warned again, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.